You are Locked On Grizzlies, your daily Memphis Grizzlies podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Welcome into the Locked On Grizzlies podcast. As always, I'm your host, Mark King, for this show, associate editor at Grizzly Bear Blues as well. You can check out my work over there along with a lot of other great people's work, doing really, really good things. Had a really great year at Grizzly Bear Blues, so please go and check that out. But also continue to listen to the podcast. If you have a chance, make sure you go and leave a review in iTunes. It really, really helps the podcast. Just now I got the Facebook page back up and going, so you can go to facebook.com/lockedongrizzlies. And you can like the Facebook page there. Whatever we're doing, you'll see over there as well. Again, follow the show on Twitter at LockedOnGrizz on Twitter. Follow me on Twitter at King_producer. Big weekend for the Grizzlies. Several things happened. We'll talk about that stuff coming up on this show today. We will talk about the Grizzlies' loss to the Celtics. Grizzlies lose over the weekend 112-103, blow another. I think that was like a 19-point lead, but now are 18-17 on the season. Celtics end up winning that game, and there was quite a bit of, again, quite a bit of controversy there. We'll talk about that game coming up in just a minute. The Grizzlies also waived. We'll just start off talking about a little news and notes. The Grizzlies waived DJ Stephens, and they signed are expected to sign Jarnell Stokes to that two-way contract, which is. It's whatever. I mean, it's another guy who's not going to make a difference. I mean, here's the problem. Here's the problem I have with DJ Stephens. I like DJ, but DJ is not an NBA player and has proven that he's not going to be an NBA player. He's like 28. I mean, he's old in terms of playing basketball anyway, at a high level. So you know exactly what you're getting from DJ Stephens, and you were never going to improve upon that. You know, there's no reason he's going to spend. It's like the Marshawn Brooks thing. You know, people usually are who they are for a reason. And to think that they're going to have spent the last 4 years doing one thing and spend the next 2 years doing something totally different. It's just not going to happen. No matter whatever faith you have in somebody, sometimes they just are who they are. And so the DJ Stephens things was when they signed him was really, I thought it was just short-sighted because the two-way contract is a contract tool for NBA teams to be able to utilize on the idea is young players. And the idea behind that is because it really is limited to players that have had two or fewer seasons. I think two or three or fewer seasons with an NBA team. So like, it literally stipulates that you have to be in the league a very short time to even qualify for a two-way contract. And that's where the problem is for me is, you know, this is a tool for you to use on a young player that you might develop. I mean, you might not. I mean, Kobe Simmons, they didn't feel like they developed or didn't feel like it was going to develop for them. So they let him go in and use that on someone else. And Yuta is the perfect example of that. Yuta is the exact embodiment of what you should have in a 2A player. You should have someone young, someone new to the league that could possibly, if you get bad injury wise, you could use that guy to possibly call up to fill some spots for you, or just if you want to take a look, if you're a bad team, you want to take a look at these guys and get people minutes on NBA floor that don't really cost you much. And so that's what these two-way contracts are, and that's kind of the problem I always had with DJ Stephens and continue to have with Jarnell Stokes. Jarnell Stokes is the exact same person that DJ is. You know what Jarnell Stokes is. Hell, they drafted him for Pete's sake. They know what Jarnell is. It's not like he's changed over the years. And so the idea that, you know, either they're going to sell tickets for you at the hustle level, it's just, you know, they're never going to sell enough tickets for you to justify them being in that spot. It's just not going to happen. And so you should be using that two-week contract on someone young that could possibly help you in the long term. They might not, but they might also develop into something that could potentially be an NBA player. And that's, you know, again, we're talking about like the 17th person on the roster technically. So like, whatever, it's not that big a deal, but you know, I would like to see the contract used in the manner that it was probably designed to be used in, not on something to try to like bring people down to South Haven. I mean, because people are going to go down. People are going to go down to South Haven whether they just want to or not, whether they have something to do or they don't. I mean, like that's, you know, some random player that, you know, was from Memphis or played at Memphis or something like that. That's not gonna boost your ticket sales. It's just not gonna happen. So use it the way it was intended to be used. So that happened on Sunday. The Grizzlies again releasing DJ Stephens and supposed to sign John L. Stokes to that two-way contract. Grizzlies also had a bit of a tiff, I guess, if you will, between Chandler Parsons and the front office staff or the coaching staff. I'm not real sure who it's directed at, but over the weekend, Chandler Parsons basically he tweeted like "help me help you" something like that, and then there was some Instagram post like "let me fly." I saw the Instagram post and I was like, "Huh, that's weird." So then what I always do is I hop on Twitter to see if anybody else has had something. And of course, David Webb from the Commercial Appeal, new beat writer for the Commercial Appeal, had posted a article about it. And basically his agent has reached out to David and, basically all but said, "Hey, I want to play. And they're not letting me play." And the quote from his article is, from Parsons, is, "The most confusing part for me is I'm healthy. I'm medically cleared by the people I work with every single day that are experts at this kind of stuff. So it's frustrating to watch a team struggle and I'm sitting there on the bench healthy, dying to play," end quote. That's from Chandler. So while I get it, I do get it, trust me. You know, I get it from both sides. First of all, I get it because Chandler he's technically cleared. So in his mind, if he's cleared to play healthy, he should at least be back on the active roster. He hasn't even been back on he's been inactive. He hasn't even been back on the active roster. So in his mind, he should at least be on the roster, on the bench, available to the coaching staff if they want to play him. I also get it from the Grizzlies' point of view. You know, that they have a guy that hasn't been healthy at all in 3 years. It took all of like 40 minutes in the first three games of this year for him to be unhealthy again, for his knees to break down again for the third year in a row. So, you know, from what the article is, that they want him to go down to the G League for the hustle to play for a period of time, but wouldn't give Chandler a end date. They wanted him just to go down there and play. And Chandler wanted a specified, "I'm going to go down there and play five games and I'm going to come back," or "I'm going to go down there and play two games," or whatever it is. He just, from the article, from his quotes, it seems, or from his agent's quotes, it seems like he just wants a specified length and the Grizzlies don't want to give that to him. They just want him to go down to the hustle. That was an option for them, to go down to the hustle. And I get that option. If you're the Grizzlies, I totally get that option. You know, instead of putting him on the active roster, put him in South Haven, let him play four or five games, if he can make four or five games, because there's no telling that his knees are going to let him even play two games from the length of time we've seen. So I get the fact that they want him just to go down there and just see what he can do. But I also get it from Chandler Parsons' point of view. I mean, if you just want a timetable, you just want communication, you just want to be told this is what we expect. And it seems like there's a lot of miscommunication or non-communication going on between Chandler Parsons and the front office, and maybe even the coaching staff. But I'm of the mind, you know, you tell him to go down there, you give him what he wants at a timetable for hustle, and let him play. And if he plays, put him on the roster. I mean, can he possibly be worse than what Wayne Seldon and Marshawn Brooks are giving you at the moment and the current wing depth? I mean, could he possibly be worse in those 14 minutes there? I don't know. I mean, maybe, but it's worth giving it a shot. It's worth finding out. But I think it starts with them. You know, I think they need to give him some type of timetable for the hustle. But I also think that the Grizzlies are right in the sense that, you know, they want him in the hustle first, because, you know, there may, even at a G League, you know, even at a G League level, full, you know, because 5-on-5 practice is different than a game, because he's been practicing in a 5-on-5 practice for 2 weeks. But that's totally different than playing in a game. So I get what the Grizzlies are doing. They want him to go down there just to say, "Hey, look, if you can play five games, whatever. But we have to start there, because there's no telling that your knees are going to even let you play even five games with the hustle. So instead of disrupting the flow of the offense or trying to work you in and making, you know, making other guys upset that they're getting put on the bench for a guy that, you know, while he is supposed to be, you know, supposed to be a starter, hasn't played in several years. I mean, there are a lot of egos, there are a lot of things, there are a lot of moving parts when you do that kind of stuff. So I get that. The Grizzlies just want to make sure that he is okay to physically play. But again, not even putting him on the active roster is just the weird part of it, because even if you wanted to do that, you would at least have him on the active roster. I mean, at least have him, you know, if he's healthy, you put him on there, and then it's up to JB. I mean, I don't know, maybe they're trying to alleviate that problem for JB by just keeping him active, because they can't play him if he's inactive. And if you put him on the bench and he gets a bunch of DNP CDs from the coaches, then I guess it starts to take a different turn. So this is a very weird situation where it seems like a lot of communication that's not happening. Just a very, very weird situation for both the Grizzlies and Chandler Parsons. You know, I don't think that they're looking for a trade, although they should. But I don't think that's what's happening. I think they're just probably at a stalemate of wanting to go down the hustle for an extended length and not wanting to go down the hustle. But it is a very weird situation. The Grizzlies obviously are going to try to figure out what they need to do with Chandler. Now, I don't think this year, I don't think anything happens this year. I think he goes to the year and they figure it out in the summer, either by via trade, because at that point it's expiring and then it's $25 million coming off your books. I mean, that's a bit different than 2 years of $25 million. So in the summer, you have a bunch of different options where a trade is more likely because of the expiring 1 year is more enticing, especially for a team that's trying to free up some cap space in the next year. Or, you know, you have a stretch provision, which you could do at that point to stretch them over the next 3 years. And then there's also a buyout option, you know, which is less money than what he's making right now. So there's a lot of different options, but I think they probably figure that out over the summer. I don't think I'd be surprised if anything happens this year, and not maybe because the Grizzlies aren't trying, but because, you know, like I said, a trade is difficult. A trade is difficult at this point just because you have 2 years left on the books. People don't really see that as enticing as just a 1 year expiring. And so right now the Grizzlies are, they're not fine without him, but you know, I don't know how much he contributes and makes a difference on this team, to be quite honest, if he's not as healthy as he should be. And there's no reason to think he is. He's always said he's healthy, and it's not his fault. His knees have broken down on him. That's not his fault, but it is what it is. So, like I said before, some people are just what they are, and this is just what Chandler Parsons is now. And so I think it's hard to do something this year just because of those things. I mean, it's you look at it and you're like, well, we're doing okay without him. You know, do we really have to move him right now? Or is it like a thing where you just, you know, got to go right now? I think they're on track to probably still make the playoffs, which I don't think it's probably going to happen. But at this point, they have a turning point and kind of they have to do some things differently if they're going to want to make the playoffs. And we'll talk about that next. We'll talk about the Grizzlies' loss coming up after the break. We'll talk about the Rockets game coming up tonight after their in that third segment as well. So stay tuned. Welcome back to the show. Again, appreciate you guys joining me. Talked a little bit of Grizzlies, Chandler Parsons, and it's the two-way contracts in the first segment. The second segment, we'll talk about that Boston lost. It is confusing. It's frustrating. It's a lot of things. And there's a point where, you know, you feel like you talk about the same stuff all the time, especially for me, because I do this show every single day. So you feel like you talk about the same stuff all the time. You feel like you say the same things over and over. And we did a show after the Lakers game, and I said, you know, I think that JB's turned a corner. I think I want to believe that this is a point where you realize what you have in Jaren, and you realize that he could be that guy, that third scorer, and he could be that guy, but you got to give him the minutes and the rope to do so. And so that's the problem. That's the Grizzlies went into a game where they were up, I think 14. I mean, they're up like 19 at one point, but they're up 14. Jaren goes out and he comes back in and they're down two. I mean, he played like a minute in the whole fourth quarter. I mean, just weird stuff. I mean, Jaren was 21 minutes for the night, 21-32 technically, 21 minutes for the night. Jamal Green, 23 minutes. Dylan Brooks, 24 minutes. Shelvin Mack, 14. Joakim Noah, 11. And Wayne Seldon, 6. I don't get it. I don't. I mean, it's frustrating to see the fact that you have your – and here's the problem. I think that the Grizzlies are probably where they're going to be. The Grizzlies are probably always where they were going to be right now. But I think the issue with it is people, especially even me, would rather – they're okay if you lose, but they would rather you lose with the fact that Jaren's trying to make a difference on the floor. They're okay if you lose in the fact that Jaren's at least been able to make a difference. He's at least out there at the end of the game playing defense. I mean, there's a difference between just losing, and there's a difference between losing and having your best players on the floor. And I think that's where the rub is. I think that's where people get frustrated with JB, even me especially. Everybody does. Is because it's like, you know, you just want something to to look forward to see if Jaren can and possibly make a difference down the stretch. And that's the issue. Like I said, the Grizzlies have blown. The other issue is just not being able to win games. I mean, playing different styles of basketball in the first half and in the second half. The Grizzlies were blowing the Celtics out in the first half. They were playing a completely different game of basketball, defensively and offensively. Defensively, the bigs were higher up on the 3-point line. They were hedging more on the pick and rolls. They were not allowing those 3-point shooters to get into a 3-point motion, as we've talked about on this very show. The fact that you had to limit 3-point shots for this team, it took a lot and made a lot, and that's exactly what they did. The bigs were higher up in the pick and rolls. They were forcing them higher. And so they're not able to turn the corner as fast. They're not able to get an open look as fast. And then the bigs can recover to the roll guy. And so the other problem with that is Al Horford is a pick and he's not rolling anywhere. He's staying right there at the 3-point line, and they're using the pick and pop option with him. So, but in the first half, like I said, they were pushing those guards very high up on the floor. And then in the second half, they played it completely differently, to where the bigs, Gasol and Jabari, they were sacking off the guards, allowing the pass back for wide open 3-point shots to Al Horford. They were letting Kyrie get ahead of steam. And the idea behind a playing up on those pick and rolls is try not to let that guard turn the corner very, very quickly. You let him turn the corner and he's gone, or you sag off of him and someone like Kyrie, he gets ahead of steam and he gets running that fast. It's hard for anybody, almost anybody, to stop him. And so that's the idea behind the way you play the pick and roll. And they played it differently in the second half. They were sagging off, and Kyrie was largely ineffective in the first half. And then he gets going in the second half and kills them, and leads this charge, helps lead this charge for the Grizzlies to get back in the game. The Celtics bench did a great job of doing the same thing. So, offensively, the Grizzlies in the first half were moving the ball well. Everybody was cutting. Gasol was able to pass out of the high post. Everything was going really well. And I mentioned there was a point in the at halftime where I think Jaren had like 20, maybe, or I think he had 15, 16 minutes, something like that. The starters were all largely the same amount of minute share. And the reserves were like 6 minutes apiece. It was like Wayne, Joakim, Shelvin. People had like 5 and 6 minutes. But for the large part of that first half, it was the starters that were on the floor. And they're the ones that got you the lead in that situation. And so you come back in the second half, and it's completely opposite. You have Jaren sitting for the entire fourth. You have just different weird things. And offensively, just stop moving. The Grizzlies just stop moving without the ball. You know, they stop cutting, they stop passing the ball, they stop moving the ball around the court. And especially in the fourth quarter, it became Mike Conley one-on-one. There weren't even a lot of pick and rolls for Mike Conley. It was Mike Conley one-on-one, and they knew exactly what they're going to do. They knew exactly what you're going to do at that point. It's not difficult to stop Mike Conley. It's not difficult to stop someone when you know exactly what they're going to do every single time down the court. And so that's the problem. J.B. Bickerstaff was asked after the game why he went with Jay. Because there's a point where Jaren was in the fourth. He got subbed back into the fourth. And it was like 6 minutes left to go, maybe 5 minutes. And you're like, oh, well, you think this is – at least they brought him back. And the Grizzlies still had the lead. They at least brought him back, him and Kyle both. And you think, well, they have a shot now, but at least they got their best play. You know, at least he let it go too long. He's let Jaren sit entirely too long and not play him. And you think, well, at least this is a point where here you go, we're going to at least have a shot. And then Jaren gets two fouls. They're quick fouls. I mean, one of them is against he plays good help rotation defense and gets stuck. Gets a drive, and the foul call wasn't even that great of a foul. I mean, it was a terrible foul call. Immediately, I mean, it was probably a minute 30 worth of play, and it immediately gets subbed back out. So for Dylan Brooks, which makes not a whole lot of sense either. So Brad Stevens matches that Dylan Brooks with Marcus Morris, goes a little bit bigger. Marcus Morris killed him down the stretch. So J.B. Bickerstaff asked about that very thing, and he says let me find the quote here. Anyway, long short of it, the shorthand of what he said is that he thought that he wanted to go small with Dylan Brooks so they could switch everything to avoid three-pointers. But the problem with that is – the first problem with that is, A, the people who got you this lead – are your best players and your starters. That's the problem A. And problem B is that they said that they wanted to switch everything, but they actually didn't switch anything. They played their defense. They didn't switch. Like, there were several open three-pointers for Al Horford, which they didn't switch. If that's your idea, and at the end of the game, you're just going to try to switch everything, but they didn't do that. So I don't really know what that means. That's not something they did on the court. I don't know that's a miscommunication between the coaches. I don't know. And then, you know, Bug said the biggest problem in the first half, playing the majority of the minutes, was Mark, Kyle, Garrett, and Jaren. That's what got you the lead. And to think that, you know, Jaren sitting on the bench at that point for the entire fourth quarter almost is going to change is just a little crazy to me. It's frustrating, and it doesn't make sense. And I think people either A, just want a very clean answer other than things like matchups or something like that. And I think people just want Jaren on the floor at the end of the game to at least have a shot at it. I think that's probably the main issue. That and Chevon Mack has just been, he's not good. He's not been great. Chevon Mack in the month of December, 306 minutes in the total month of December, 76 points. 76 points in the entire month of December. It's like 0.25 points per minute. I mean, it's not good. And then defensively, he's even worse. So the Grizzlies are going to have to figure that out. They're going to have to do something. You know, again, that's why people want Javon Carter in the mix. I'm of the mind that, he can't be worse than Chevon Mack. I don't think. I mean, Chevon Mack's been pretty damn bad. So I don't think he can be worse than Chevon Mack at this point, but we'll have to wait and see. Again, the Grizzlies lose another one. It's their, you know, like 17 or 18 point lead blown, like two games in the last 2 weeks that's happened. Like, there's a certain point where that's a coaching thing. You know, that you have to continue to get your guys ready to play. You have to continue to get your stars in the right mindset. For some reason, I have no idea what, but for some reason they're coming out in second halves and just playing just awful basketball, and completely different basketball. And it's your job as a coaching staff to continue to really remind them what they're doing. And that they may be doing that. I don't know. I'm not in any of the huddles, so I can't tell you for sure. And they may be continually reminding them, but for whatever reason, it's not getting translated to the court. It's not getting translated to actual play. So Grizzlies are going to have to figure it out. And lucky for them, they got some easy games coming up after coming up the next week or so. So, or easier. But we'll talk about that and as well as this Houston matchup after the break. Welcome back to the show. Again, the Grizzlies lose to the Celtics over the weekend, 112-103. They are now 18-17 on the season. They take on the Rockets tonight at 6 o'clock. Rockets are 14-14. That record is a little bit more deceptive than they probably should be. Same thing with the Celtics. They have a deceptive record. They're a good team. Obviously, they have James Harden, Chris Paul. You don't have players like that and not be a good team. So the Grizzlies go to Houston tonight to take on a Rockets team. Excuse me, that was an old record. Sorry, they're 20-15. That's the Houston record. My bad. I was looking at the last box score they had, but even still a deceptive record. They've turned it on as of late to really put on a winning streak. So the Grizzlies are going to have to. It's going to be tough to win this game. It's not a game I thought they were going to win anyway. The last game, the Houston came to the Grizzlies. They won 105-97. James Harden had 32. Clint Capella had 26. And Chris Paul had 10. And then Gerald Green off the bench killed him with 17. So, this is a team that is very, very good with getting foul calls. Obviously, James Harden is by and far the best player in the league at getting fouls drawn. This team is a very, very good three-point shooting team. They are first in the league in attempts. They are very good. They take a ton of threes every single game. James Harden is just James Harden. He shoots 12 threes a game, 12, which is insane. That's sometimes just under the number of the entire Grizzlies team shoots for the entire game. So they're going to have a lot of the same game plan they had against the Celtics. Defensively, they're going to have to stay up on shooters. They're going to try to make sure they stay in their space. But James Harden, it's very difficult to get up into him because you have to get up into him without really using your hands. Because he's so good at if your hands there and kind of in the cookie jar, if you will, if your hands there, he's so good at either drawing the foul. And thank God they don't call the whole rip through foul anymore. But either that or taking you off the dribble, one of those things. So it's very difficult to play him defensively. So their game plan defensively will be largely a lot of the same you saw with the Celtics because it's a very similar team. The Houston Rockets are first in the league in. And offensive first, they flow between first and second in the league in offensive rating. They're not a great defensive team. So this is a game that the Grizzlies should be able to score buckets. And the fact that they only scored like 95-97 against them last game is not great because most teams are scoring 110-115 on them. So the Rockets team is just, they're just going to outrun you. They're going to be better on offense than you. They don't care about anything else. They're a slightly below average defensive team, at 24th in defensive rating. But again, they score, right around 110, 111 points per game and have a really, really good offensive rating. This is a team that, really, really knows how to put the ball in the basket. So, again, defensively, a lot of the same game plan they had against the Celtics, but can they execute the game plan is a totally different story. Can they execute it for a full game? I'm not sure this is a game that the Grizzlies probably win. I think it was – and that's why I made – like seeing games like the Celtics, games like the Kings, that's why those games become even more glaring. That's why those games become even bigger after the fact, because you have games like the Rockets, who it's even tougher task to be able to win those games. And those games at Houston is a game that we all probably thought they were going to lose. And if you look at like the Celtics Rockets Pistons matchup, the next three games, And if you go 2-1 against those, and that loss doesn't look as bad. But then you take the loss and you go 1-2, then you're looking at Celtics locks and go, man, that if you know, could have had that one, especially with a 17-18 point lead that you blew. Those are when the losses get to become increasingly frustrating for the fans, and I get it. It's frustrating for everybody. So those are the losses that really start to come back and haunt you. I don't think they win this game though. It's going to be a very, very tall task to be able to compete with the Rockets in their own arena. But again, the Grizzlies are a team that play up and down in the competition. So for them, if they went in and competed with the Rockets, I don't know if it would surprise me. I think at this point, nothing really surprises me with this team. But you know, what you want to see with this Rockets team, even if you lose, what you want to see is you want to see rotations. You want to see Jaren Jackson getting a chance. You want to see rotations. You want to see all those things that you know you don't normally. That you're always looking for, even in a loss. So those are the things that you want to see going into the game. And just as we thought the Lakers was a scheduled loss last weekend, they go out and win that game 107-99 and doing large part to Jaren Jackson. So hopefully the coaching staff will play it a bit different. We'll see different lineups, different rotations, and we'll see hopefully Jaren Jackson getting over 30 minutes tonight. Grizzlies coming up on the schedule. They have Detroit after that at home, Brooklyn after that at home, Wednesday and Friday, both home games this week, and then at San Antonio, at Pelicans, and then back at home for San Antonio. That's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 games, and then at the Heat after that. Those are 6 games that are all winnable games. Those are teams all right there that are all in your same area of whether that be Western Conference playoffs. They're all kind of right there where you are. They're all decent teams. And so especially, you know, the Pelicans, the Spurs, those teams right there, if you want to really start, you're going to have to start trying to separate yourself from those teams that 7, 8, 9, 10, 11, 12 race for the playoffs in the West, for those last 2 or 3 spots. You really have to separate yourself, and winning those games are the most important. You know, the Spurs, the Pelicans, those games are the most important. And those are games you are winnable games. They are very winnable games over the next 6 games. They're all winnable, very winnable, because they're against teams that are very much like you as a team. And so hopefully the Grizzlies will be able to win a few of those. I'd say you hope to win the next 2 games at home. So that would put you 2-1 on the week over Detroit and Nets, and then the loss to at the Rockets, which I think is a fine week. And then that Celtics loss kind of disappears into the background. And so, you know, if over the next 6 games, especially January in general, they have a lot of winnable games in January. Over the next 6 games, you know, you go out and have a winning record in January, and this whole December, horrible December they've had, it becomes not less important, just becomes less kind of at the forefront of your mind. And recent history is always going to predicate what is talked about, even on this show, on everybody's show, what people talk about on social media. So this next 2 weeks, even this next month for January, is a very, very important month for the Grizzlies to try to pick up some wins, to get back into the playoff race, and make sure that they even try to separate themselves from other Western Conference teams that they're in the mix for. And that starts with the Spurs and the Pelicans. But even more so, it starts getting those wins against the Pistons and the Nets this week. Again, that's it for me for this show. Make sure you're following me on Twitter @King_producer. Make sure you're following the show on Twitter @LockedOnGrizz. If you have any questions, we didn't do a Monday mailbag today because I didn't have any questions. And so make sure you're getting those questions in every Monday. Normally we do this Monday mailbag every Monday in the second segment of the show. Obviously today I didn't have any questions, so we didn't do that. So make sure you're getting those questions in. You can email them to me at lockedongrizz@gmail.com. You can DM me on Twitter, and you can send me a Facebook message on Facebook on our Facebook page. There are multiple ways to get in touch with me, so you have no excuses. So make sure you're sending those questions in. And if it's a question that's time sensitive, I won't wait till next Monday. I'll just answer it on the next show. If it's a question that can wait, then I'll probably wait to do that on Monday. But again, send me any type of questions, no matter what, and we'll answer those, even if it's not on Monday. Again, if you'd like to be a feature sponsor on our show, email me at lockedongrizz@gmail.com. Find us on iTunes, Stitcher, or wherever you get your podcasts, or online at lockedongrizzlies.com.